Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to thank all the organizers for organizing this event very successfully so far, and also giving me a chance to speak. So today I'll be talking to you about a cohomology problem for the local operators in maximal Super-Yang-Mills theory in four dimensions, and discuss its possible relevance to the holographic black hole physics. So the talk is roughly based on the two papers that I wrote with these wonderful collaborators, Sunjin Che, Eunwoo Lee, both in Korea, Xia Li in University of Michigan, and Jaemo Park, a faculty in postdoc. I should also mention an important paper by Ximing Chang and Yingxian Lin, which appeared last September, which basically sort of revived an old cohomology problem. This was a kind of initiating paper on this problem in the recent 1 year. The following three papers are also closely relevant to what I'll say today. So I'll directly explain to you the rough structure of the problem I'm interested in, and before getting into the details, I'll motivate it enough, hopefully. So the problem, the object I'm interested in is the so-called 1/16 BPS states in four-dimensional maximal Super-Yang-Mills theory. These are the minimally BPS states in this system. So to define this 1/16 BPS states, or if you like, 1/16 BPS local operators, among the 32 supercharges, you pick a pair of mutually Hermitian conjugate supercharges, and you demand the BPS states to be annihilated by them. The pair is chosen in such a way that the anti-commutators of them are given by the linear combination of the energy or scale dimension of the operator and the following three R charges in SO6 and two rotation in SO4. The BPS state annihilated by this operator saturates the lower bound in their energy given in terms of these five charges. The supercharges chosen to define this object are nilpotent. So with this nilpotent supercharges identified, BPS states annihilated by this object, is formally behaving like a harmonic form, which are in one-to-one correspondence to the cohomology classes with respect to this nilpotent object operator Q. And this cohomology is what I'm going to study today. Before getting into the details, let me explain to you the motivation why I'm interested in. In most general, this is a specialization of what's called the quarter BPS states in n equal to 1 supersymmetric quantum field theories. So in principle, it contains lots of interesting information about the supersymmetric dynamics, as these states belong to what's called the semi-short representations of the superconformal algebra. My main motivation today will be to use these 1/16 BPS states to shed more light on the microstates of black holes in the holographically dual ages 5 times S5. This requires us to do the study of these states at strong coupling and at large n, and both of them are not so easy to deal with if you want to do it rigorously. So today I will explain to you a recent, perhaps very modest progress along this program. Instead of strong coupling, I'll try to explain to you the cohomologies at weak coupling, mostly at the one loop level, and emphasize to you why it's relevant to discussing the strong coupling dynamics. Eventually, we'd like to study the large n gauge theory, but today I'll modestly explain to you some progress we got in the past year at low ranks, like say SU2 or SU3. So before getting into the details, I think it will be good to leave a little bit of historical remark to explain to you how our concept or notion about this problem has changed over the past 20 years or so. There are several important turning points. The first important point is, of course, in 2004, the construction of the first construction of the BPS black holes in ADS 5 times S5. To understand the microstate structure of these BPS black holes, I mean, the most efficient way of studying the BPS spectrum is to construct and compute the index. So in the context of ADS 5 CFT4, this index has been formulated and studied by these authors. But at that time, due to a little bit of technical problem that I won't elaborate today, it was unclear how to see black holes from this index in the larger limit. So facing this situation then, some group of people have turned to the direct studies of the BPS operators and spectrum using the weak coupling cohomology problem, the same cohomology problem that I just sketched in the previous slide. Unfortunately, at that time, no new solutions for this cohomology could be found beyond the rather trivial BPS gravitons. So that was the stage at 2005. Situation changed quite a lot from 5 years ago, when we started to gradually realize how to see the black holes out of this index, okay? And this index is coupling independent, so you can interpret it in various parameter regime of your interest. If you try to interpret this index in the weak coupling regime, you can interpret it as counting the weak coupling cohomologies that I will explain to you, okay? So with more confidence that this cohomology problem should have a solution because their index counted the back engine Hawking entropy, there was some revived interest from last year to revisit this cohomology problem to construct new cohomologies which should explain these black hole microstates. So this is a bit of history. And let me explain to you this weakly coupled cohomology problem of my interest today. So the maximal super Young-Mills I take with SUN gauge group, all fields are in a joint. In n equal one super field language, these are consisting of three chiral multiplets and one vector multiplet. I'm interested in the gauge invariant local BPS operators, 116 BPS operators, and I do what I can do, so I study them in the weakly coupled regime. Let me first do it in the first free limit. It's very easy, because in the free theory, all we have to do is identify the invariant fields under this chosen pair of supercharges. These turn out to be the following fields, insertable notations, an arbitrary number of holomorphic derivatives can be dressing them. In interacting theory, you have to replace them by covariant derivatives, but anyway. Once you basically identify the invariant fields, any gauge invariants of them are giving BPS operators in the free theory, because there are no anomalous dimension in coupling going to zero limit. Now, not all of them remain BPS if you turn on coupling, no matter how small it is. For instance, at small G Young-Mills, if you study the classical supersymmetric transformation acting on these free invariant fields, some of the transformations are non-zero and proportional to G Young-Mills, as we well know. So this classical Q and Q dagger, proportional to G Young-Mills acting on these invariant fields, are at half loop. If you take the anti-commutator of them to compute the anomalous dimension, these are at one loop. So the goal of this program, this modest program, is to find a subset of free BPS operators which remain BPS at one level. That's the goal of my study in the past 1 year. Of course, you may ask, suppose that you found this proper subset of free BPS operators which remain BPS at one loop. How do you know that they remain BPS all the way to strong coupling to explain black holes, right, or study black holes? There has been certain non-renormalization theory pursued with very interesting progress, I think, but logically the situation is very unclear, I think. But rather empirically, the index of these weakly coupled one-loop cohomologies has counted the black hole entropy in the large N and large charge limits. So empirically, we feel that many of them should remain BPS. So I expecting certain non-renormalization theorem to be established in the near future, I'll just study the one-loop cohomologies in detail, so, okay? Logically, I think it's not completely clear at this moment. So the strategy goes as follows, strategy of finding new cohomologies. So the problem have been studied at low ranks of gauge group. You first study the non-trivial cohomologies at SU2. With that, we're gonna crank up to SU3, SU4, gradually including the ranks. So SU2 is the easiest. So at finite given rank, we construct all the cohomologies at given charges, and then we mode out those from a rather trivial BPS multi-graviton cohomologies, because that's not what we are really interested in. So this job has been done last year by Chang and Lin, and they found the first non-graviton cohomology for SU2, which I'll explain to you in a moment. Before proceeding, I might have to spend some time to explain to you what does it mean by the BPS gravitons at finite n. At large n, we all know what it is. In the cohomological setup, we first start from the BPS chiral primaries, 116 BPS chiral primaries. These are at single trace level. These are nothing but the scalars, BPS scalars, symmetrized within the trace. You construct a superconformal descendants out of them, and they give rise to the one-particle gravitons. You multiply them, they give rise to the multi-particle gravitons. In the cohomological sense. These are what we well know at large n. Even at finite n, these constructions give rise to a class of cohomologies. A certainty at finite n is that the number of independent operators compared to large n reduces due to trace relations. Even this certainty has a precise meaning in the gravity dual. It's a quantum field theory dual of what is called the string exclusion principle. Due to the fact that the gravitons at large enough charges polarize into spherical, polarize into non-trivial D3 brains. Okay? So including all these finite uncertainties, these cohomologies reflect the expected properties of BPH giant graviton physics, including finite n effects. So that's the meaning of finite n giant gravitons. Okay? And that's not what you are really interested in today. So we're going to study remainders, which have chances to describe black holes. So from now on, I'll call the remaining operators just black hole operators. Conservatively, those results at lower ranks would just be an intermediate step toward large n. But of course, progressively, we're striving to get qualitative lessons of whether these novel operators at low rank behaves qualitatively like black holes and whether we can get lessons and so on. So depending on how rigorous you are or brave you are, you can choose one of the two viewpoints. I'll be talking to you only the low rank examples today. So I explained to you the strategy, but it's extremely difficult. So far, we lack good analytic insights about the structure of these solutions, so we heavily use computers so far. And I want to do it more efficiently. Okay? So a streamlined strategy is to quickly diagnose which chart sectors hold new operators. We use the help from the index. Okay? So the strategy is that we grade operators with charges which can appear in the index. There are many charges, but for instance, this is the one which is canonically used, and compute the index of the full BPS operators, and compute the index over the finite n gravitons only. You can do that not, I mean, it's an algebraic problem, but you can manage to do it at low ranks. You subtract the two. Whenever the result is non-zero, that's the point where a new operator should exist, and you focus your effort to construct it, rather than just scanning through everything. So this has been done by ourselves. I mean, what Chang and Lin has done was really elaborate thing. We want to get new results quickly and generate more results from which we can get lessons. So this has been done extensively for SU2. At the end of my talk, I'll comment on what we have done for SU3. So to study the index with this fugacity conjugate to this J, and in full generality, we could only compute the index in series expansion in this fugacity up to certain orders. You compute the two, they start to agree until very, very, very high order, until let's say 23. If you have good eyes, they agree precisely up to 23. From 24th order, they gradually start to deviate, and the difference is given like follows. And at every charge sector, we are expecting non-graviton-like operators, which you want to construct. One can do the construct computation of the index more efficiently in what's called the BMN truncation of the cohomology problem. You can select a subset of lectures, for instance, not using gauge inners, not using derivatives at all, and this is a consistent truncation of the cohomology problem. And basically, because you don't use derivatives, this is like a quantum mechanical cohomology problem. You can do the index computation exactly, both of them exactly and the difference exactly. The reason why I call it BMN is that it's related to a consistent truncation of the classical Super-Yang-Mills theory on a sphere down to a quantum mechanical matrix model, which is well known as the BMN matrix model. But anyway, in this technical truncation, we can compute the index exactly and get good intuitions or guidances on which sector we should focus on to construct the cohomologies. So with the guidance of this index, I mean, we can refine it and get a detailed information on which charge sector we should study. But from here, we should really do another hard exercise. Let's say on, we have to combine numerical studies, computerized studies, and some guessworks, importantly. And then we constructed an infinite tower of non-graviton-like cohomology, which goes as follows, labeled by these non-negative integers, which turn out to completely account for this BMN index. So there was a hard procedure of getting this, but I mean, let me not tell it now. If you ask me in person, I can tell you. So the lowest operator is the unique operator which is at the 24th order, which is the threshold, the first non-graviton operator at 24th order, found by Chang and Lin. And this tower fully explains the BMN index in the following way. So the difference is given by a product of three factors. The first factor can be geometrically expanded, and each term demands there to be a unique fermionic operator, which is this. So I'll call it a core black hole primary operator, sort of slightly abusing the terminology. The second factor turns out to come out from a limited set of dressings by graviton cohomology to this black hole cohomology. There are many graviton-like single trace operators in BMS sector, but only a limited set of them are allowed to dress it, which I'll turn to in more detail in the next slide. The third factor is the factor coming from the superconformal descendants of these product cohomologies in the BMN subsector. So once you know this infinite tower of cohomologies, the whole BMN index can be explained. These operators really don't look like black holes in most senses. It's just SU2 theory. If you go to large charge limit, the entropy doesn't grow fast. So in most senses, it's just a warming up exercise. But studying the properties enjoyed by these operators in more detail, as I'll show you in the next slide, they exhibit various subtle properties. And in my eyes, qualitatively at least, they behave in a way a little bit similar to black holes, which I'd like to present to you. So in order to notice these subtle and novel properties, let's see the BMN index again. So before explaining that, I first note the general fact that the Q I used is just a classical supercharged Q at half loop. So they satisfy the Leibniz rules. Okay? So if Q is satisfying these Leibniz rules, one obtains the fact that if one has constructed two different cohomologies, representatives of the cohomologies, multiplying them gives another cohomology because of this property. So, and note that, especially considering a product of the black hole type cohomologies we constructed and the graviton type cohomologies, we note that there are 17 different species of single trace graviton particles in the BMN sector. But in the index, out of these 17, only 3 gravitons taking this form are allowed to dress the black hole type operators. So it seems that what I claim to be the black hole type operators in SU2 theory really dislikes to be dressed by most of the graviton type particles. This feature continues in the general SU2 index. So you get the threshold operator and construct all the contribution from its superconformal descendant and subtract it from the black hole-like cohomology index. There's a wide range of charges in which the spectrum turns out to be very boring, just no states. Okay? It's just zero until 31st order. But if you take a look at possible product cohomologies between the threshold operator and the low-lying gravitons, there are many candidate product cohomologies that might have appeared in this range, but they don't appear in the index. So the simplest possibility of this boringness of the spectrum is that they are all Q-exact, namely absent in the spectrum. Okay? We have checked this claim possibility for many low-lying product cohomologies, although not all. For instance, this is the threshold cohomology, and these are the low-lying gravitons. Using extensively the SU2 trace relation, they turn out to be magically, I think, very non-trivially Q-exact, meaning that they are absent in the BPS spectrum. It seems that the index is telling us that there is a kind of partial no-hair theorem, that the black hole cohomology dislikes to be dressed by most, not all, but most of the graviton cohomologies. For conformal primaries of gravitons, we have seen that in the index, apart from these 3, out of 32 independent single trace operators, 29 of them are not multiplying this black hole type operator, at least invisible in the index. Conformal descendants have more interesting possibilities. You can see more in our paper. We think that the conformal descendants can dress this threshold cohomologies, and I'll comment about that a little bit in the next slide only. So this is what I already showed. I'm gonna actually conclude with a couple of remarks on what we have done on extra or what we are doing in progress. Good. So I try to explain to you, in a very limited sense, the construction program of BPS black hole microstates. And I think throughout this talk, I've explained to you in which sense it is a very limited kind of construction. We found new, what I call non-graviton-like or black hole-like cohomologies for SU2 gauge theories. And we'd like to go higher, let's say in SU3. I asked many people to do that, but so far, two of my students and my colleague Xia Li in Michigan have heavily used their computers to compute this difference index for SU3 theory, for instance, the BMN sector. The series goes as follows. The thresholds turn out to be surprisingly low. But so far, what we have been doing is just experiment, using heavily computers, it's very little intelligent. So to get to higher end and higher charges, we really need to learn more analytic insights from the result what we got. Or conversely, there has been developed certain topologically twisted quantum field theory called holomorphic twist, which is directly relevant for studying this cohomology problem. Okay? So in this holomorphically twisted quantum field theory, many interesting emergent structures are arising, like infinite emergent, infinite symmetry structures, and so on. So hopefully, using these structures, we might get more analytic control over these higher end and higher charge cohomologies. That's the hope. The last point I'd like to emphasize is that I've explained to you, although in SU2 cohomology, a partial no-hair behavior. The fact, I mean, if this fact is really a serious fact for general n all the way to large n, the partial no-hair behavior means that there should be hairy black holes. And it's a famously well-known fact that in ADS, there are hairy black holes, BPS or non-BPS. So many studies, including this paper, have been done. So in order to shed more light on the observation we made about the partial no-hair behavior in SU2 cohomologies, we directly did the gravity, and what I think is the gravity analog of this, this kind of phenomenon. Namely, we studied in the background of a BPS black hole by Gutowski and Riehl, we studied a perturbative fluctuation, but perturbative BPS fluctuation of a charge scalar, which is dual to the following operators in the dual field theory. Okay? And we have found that a similar partial no-hair behavior has been observed in this gravity dual calculation, very similar to what I explained in the context of SU2 cohomologies. So what we found is that for conformal primaries and low-lying conformal descendants, the perturbative dressings of this scalar is forbidden, just working out the linearized BPS equation. The perturbative hairs are allowed only for large enough conformal descendants, which I think is very similar to what we have found in SU2 cohomologies. So it's n equal to 2 versus n equal to infinity, but there's a chance that this partial no-hair behavior can be true. So combining all these insights, we'd like to build up a better picture on hairy and or BPS black holes in ADS. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the wonderful talk. I have a question about, it seems that for the SU2 case, it, you studied really well, and the SU3 sector, it's both starting from a T to a 24. Is there a good reasoning why that's really the limiting factor that's happening and why it's coming with a negative sign?
You mean why the threshold is this low?
Yeah.
It turns out that for SU2 and SU3, the threshold are the same, but I think that's an accident. It should be growing, I mean, roughly it should be growing as a function of n.
That's what I would have guessed.
Before doing SU3, I expected it, growth will be uniform, but maybe it's a little bit erratic. My colleague has reported some SU4 results, and it's not remaining the same. And it shouldn't remain the same because, you know, at energy order below n or something, gravity should be a good approximation.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this is just an erratic result, I think.
Okay. And do you see something similar behavior with SO by
what?
Chance?
What?
Not beyond just SU and
types. SO group. It's a good question. I don't know yet.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, so about the same Z minus Z graviton, do you also have the cohomology classes, representatives, I mean?
That's a challenging question. You know, SU2 and SU3 are very different groups theoretically. The reason SU2 is easy is that, you know, SU2 adjoint is a three-dimensional vector, so you can trade everything into inner and outer products, and trace relations are simple. SU3 and higher, there's not FABC and DABC, and I'm not sure if I can do it in a short term. But
not even with knowing the charges? Do you also have the unrefined?
I have a refined index expression, but I don't know all the charges, but because index is ignorant about one charge, one of the five charges. I should do a hard guesswork and have a better knowledge on trace relations. I'm not sure if I can do it in, let's say, in 1 or 2 months. I'm not sure, yeah.
There's an online question. Offer?
Yes, hi. Do you expect the distinction between the black hole states and the multi-graviton states to persist also to strong coupling, or is it only valid at weak coupling?
or the distinction between this black hole and multigraviton?
Yes, and the multigravitons.
The multigraviton operators are very well protected. It's called a very short multiplet. So I expect it will be, I mean, the graviton operator will be robustly well-defined all the way to strong coupling.
Well, but also the multigravitons, I mean, the multigravitons are in the same multiplets, right? So
yeah, it's in a semi-short multiplet. And you're asking whether the notion of the graviton and black hole could be interchanged or something? I mean, the
yes,
multiplet structure
mix,
is very different.
Did they mix it strong coupling, yeah.
The multiplet structure is very different, so I think they would be different, yeah.
Yeah, I know here you were looking at 1/16th BPS sector, but I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the 1/8th BPS sector as well, where, if I understand correctly, there's one sector which hasn't been fully studied and there's an expectation that there might be order n squared number of states.
Yeah, there are different 1/8th BPS sectors and many of, let's say, current ring sectors and so on are, I think many people believe they are solved.
Yeah.
It's called the Shor or McDonald sector, in which the situation is unclear. To be honest, I mean, this kind of numerics exercise has been done in this unsolved 1/8 BPS sector, but the threshold turns out to be very high. I mean, we computed up to very, very high order. Just, I mean, my colleagues, they just get gravitons up to, I don't know, 50 or 70th order or something. So the situation is unclear there.
I see, but the index calculation seems to suggest some order n squared number of states.
Yes, that's the case, but supposing that calculation is right. Yes, okay. Yes. There are many ways that the saddle point calculation can go certain, you know, Picard Lefschetz theory and, I mean, fake saddle points or so on. So, you know, in principle, it can go wrong, but although it looks honest, so situation is unclear, I should say. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
One more question? Okay, then let's